Central Coast Uncorked. Coco's giving us kisses right now.
We tried to shoo her away, but it didn't really work.
There is no shooing of Coco. Coco is a part of this world.
If you've ever had a pug, you know our pain.
It's, you know, if you've ever had a pug, you know the joy.
The pain. So
come here, Coco.
This week, we are... I think we just have to start over.
Come on. He was getting on this.
So this week, we are taking you guys to
a dog-friendly location.
Coco, could you, like, not?
It's fine. Coco, I love you. Don't exclude Coco.
All right. So, we're taking you this week to Parrish Family Vineyard.
To a dog-friendly location called Parrish Family Vineyard.
Yes, they are dog-friendly. Not only do they have tons of outdoor space in the forms of their patio, balcony patios, they also have like a patio down below that's like adjacent to the vineyard. It also has a little like four-hole golf course right there, which is super cool.
Yes. Your Coco agrees. It's great.
And the wine and views to match
it. The wine was delicious.
Yeah. So we had never been there before. They've been at this new location for about a year and a half. Before that, they were in downtown Paso. So a newer location for them, but they're really utilizing the space well. It's beautiful when you walk in. It's like walking into a craftsman bungalow, like you're going to someone's house. And then they have space for dinner parties, brunch, rehearsal dinners, etc.
Yeah, they don't do weddings, but they do basically everything else.
Yeah.
I thought it was beautiful, like so inviting. We were a little bit rushed towards the end because we had other appointments to get to. But I felt like all of the wine was delicious.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, like they were... Coco, you're so great in this episode. They were busy because it was a Saturday on a 3-day weekend.
It was.
So we want to acknowledge that. Like, if you heard chitter chatter in the background, it might have been more than usual than if you visited on a weekday or on a Sunday. We were there on a Saturday afternoon. But they still were very attentive. We got through all of the wines.
It was awesome, yeah.
And it was great. And we had a chance to talk to their winemaker and owner, David, who told us a little bit about, like, the technical side of vineyard management and winemaking. And it was very interesting.
Insight in, like, the care and grooming and trellising, is mm-hmm. that the right word?
Yeah.
Of the vines, which was fascinating.
Very interesting. So, overall, we hope that you enjoy this episode, and we will see you guys next week.
Sounds good.
This is a rosé of Grenache, so 100% for this one.
Ooh, it smells good.
Yeah, it makes my mouth water as soon as I smell
it. They're both great things to start, yeah. So that's awesome.
It makes me want, like, summer to get here quicker. Mm-hmm. Right. I feel like this weekend is a fake summer, though. Like, they're tricking me because it's supposed to be, like, 70. And I'm like,
spring is coming.
My system's right. Going to be like, yes. And then I feel like in 2 weeks it's going to get really freaking cold.
Saying, like, no rain. Even into March.
I know. It's so crazy.
It's not good. But yeah. At least it'll feel a little more.
Yeah. Yeah. A little more rosé-y.
Yeah.
Sounds
good. Through, and then we can come back.
Yeah. So you said you guys were in downtown Paso for 7 years?
Mm-hmm. We were right next to kind of near like Fish Gaucho and Brown Butter.
Yes.
Like right on that
yeah.
street.
Yeah.
Which was really cool. So... this is our members room, which is one of my favorites because it has this sweet little fireplace, and so members can come in and like say, oh, I want to be on the fireplace couch yeah. And like
I love the light fixtures.
Spaces. Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
And then the same thing with outside. They can kind of decide where they want to be and people can kind of just come
hang out
and enjoy.
It looks
like really specific Fridays and Saturdays we do a paired flight. So it's like three small dishes paired with three wines. March 1st we're relaunching our Sunday brunch program. So,
oh my god.
So we love food. So yeah. We try and make like
That's way better than bringing your own picnic. Yeah.
Actually tonight we're doing a
I was just reading about that.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
That
it's called
awesome.
Dinner in the Dark. Mm-hmm. So I can actually show you. I'm just setting it up downstairs, but the first part of the evening we're gonna have blindfolds on and they're gonna chef's making us little like tasting plates, and so we're gonna try and figure out what it is.
Yeah.
And what
they're
awesome.
Tasting.
I and love then
it.
We'll do wine tasting in black wine glasses, which totally throws you off. And then we'll do a dinner using the ingredients.
Yeah. Very cool.
No,
awesome.
I think that's so cool. I told her, we've got people coming for dinner tonight. And I was like, damn it.
Yeah.
This is going to be so much more fun.
I'm sure we're going to do it again. Like, it's going to be really, really cool. And then we do a lot of, we don't do weddings here, but we do a ton of, like, rehearsal dinners, anniversaries. We've done some really fun, like, corporate events. We have a putting green, which will make more sense when I kind of tell you a little bit more about the history. But all kinds of stuff. In this garden over here, we've done cool barbecue events. We've done cigar and wine pairings, which have been pretty fun. We did one for Father's Day and then one for Black Friday.
Okay.
So lots of things to play.
Was this your production facility before you moved out here? Like, has this
No. Okay. So this, that's a great question. So we got this vineyard in 2013. The winery there was finished in 2016. And then the tasting room finished in 2017.
Okay.
So before that, when we were in downtown, we used a custom crush facility. So now everything's out here, but we have two other vineyards, too, in Creston and Templeton. So we do monthly club member events. So just to make it more convenient for people to feel like they can be here all the time and that they only get to come, like, two times a year.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's part of the joy of being at a club is
totally.
Like it's your place.
Yeah,
like you go there.
Hang out, right?
Yeah.
We do all kinds of events in here, and then in this little room, I do food and wine pairing classes Wednesdays through Saturdays. And gosh, we're doing like 2 to 3 of those a week. They've been like super popular.
Yeah, that's
and they're so fun for people who like come into town and they like want to go wine tasting, but maybe they haven't done it before, and like, and it kind of like gets all their nerves out.
Yeah.
And we go through like, here's how you taste wine. Mm-hmm. Here's a bunch of words that you're going to hear that you might not understand. So like, here's what they actually mean, so you feel like you can participate.
Yeah.
And then we just go over basics of like food and wine pairing.
How fun. We should do that.
Yeah. Is it
totally.
Is it like on demand or do you have set schedule?
So we typically do them 3 to 4:30
okay.
each day, and then Saturdays at 11. And so they're just kind of as scheduled, but you guys can always email me or I'll email you next time we have
so
a couple.
Fun. Yeah.
I know actually we already have a couple for next week on the calendar. But yeah, they happen all the time, so they're pretty
No, that's awesome. And that's such a clever idea to like break it down, like make people more comfortable with the whole thing. And
So I moved here from Chicago like 5 years ago and literally did nothing. About wine. I was like, there's white wine and there's red wine. That's
and sparkling.
It. Game over. Yeah. I didn't even know if I knew that. Like, I knew, like, nothing about wine. And then we would go tasting and people would say all these things and you'd be like,
Of course.
And you'd, like, swirl and you'd be like, what am I doing? And then, like, we'd get in the car and my husband
it
and I would just
like
laugh because we were just like, what is this? You know? And so that's a really, really cool part of the class because it's like, I've so been that person.
Yeah.
Now I'm taking my certified sommelier exam in 3 weeks.
And
Very so cool. I've totally been where people are.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're family owned and we're really small. We're only 3,000 cases. We're not distributed.
No.
Like, we're a lot smaller than I think it kind of looks,
it looks
like we
are. Definitely.
Like, we want people to be able to, like, understand wine. And David always says, like, if you're not having fun drinking wine, we're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Like, wine is supposed to be fun. If it stops being fun and starts being, like, intimidating and everything else, then, like, that's on us. Like, that's our fault, you know?
Should make it approachable.
Yeah. We try and make it easy. Yeah, it's a really cool back background story. So the Parrish family has been in kind of the greater Paso Robles area since pre-Prohibition. Wow. Oh. So David's grandfather, his name was Earl Henderson, and he was the first person to plant grapes in Atascadero. Okay. So we have this newspaper clipping on the wall that's from 1927, and it's talking about all the struggles that they had to do. They were trying to plant everything by horses, and they were getting, like, stuck in the mud, and, like, things were just, like, not going well, generally. So that's what that's talking about. He actually was the first guy in, so he literally had P.O. Box number one, which is pretty neat. So that was David's grandfather, and then David is our owner and winemaker at Parrish, and his daughter Cecily is our co-owner. Okay. She also does our wine club. She bakes all of our bread from scratch daily.
Oh, that's amazing.
She takes all of our photography, so it's really cool that they're super, super involved.
Yeah,
I'm a sucker for family-run stuff.
It's the best part of Paso.
Like, take all my money because I love it.
I think it's what makes Paso feel different and like feel unique. Like. Yeah. You know, when you go up to Napa, the wines are fantastic. The service is great. It's beautiful. It just doesn't feel the same.
Mm-hmm.
And people come in all the time and they're like, oh my gosh, Paso is like the nice Napa. And I'm like, oh, that's such a cool thing to hear. I'm so glad, you know, that it like, that character has.
I hope we hold on to that.
Totally. Yeah. And I think we will. I mean, it's such a community effort. So we're here today on our new property off of Adelaida Road. But we have two other vineyards in Creston and in Templeton. So we have 150 acres all together. But we're pretty small since we only make 3,000 cases. Yeah. So we actually sell 90% of our fruit. So David will select the best 10% to make our wines. But we work with really, really cool local partners. Dow buys some of our grapes, Booker, Closelin, Laventure, really
just
amazing.
Good names. Yeah.
And it makes it so fun for us, especially during harvest, because all those winemakers come to like check on the grapes, and it makes this really cool like co-op kind of atmosphere, and they're all like working together, and I think it just makes everybody's wines more elevated when it's like more of like a team sport, which is not kind of what I think most people consider winemaking to be. But here in Paso, I feel like it is.
You're invested in those labels as well, right? Because you're like, oh, that's our fruit there. Like, it's super cool to go, like, check that out, see what they did with it.
I just drank a great Booker GSM. So if that was your fruit, it was delicious.
Well, and it's so cool, too, because, like, when people come wine tasting, they come usually for, like, a whole day or, like, a weekend, right?
Yeah.
Like, they go to, like, three places a day, four maybe, depending on, you know, how it's going.
How much they can.
But, yeah, how much they can handle,
how
what's happening.
They are.
Right. But the more places they go, like, when we work together, it just makes everybody's wines better. And so everyone who gets to come to Paso is like, oh my gosh, I tried great wine after great wine after great wine. And that's awesome.
Like, and then you find out how interconnected it all is, and you're like, well, that's why it's all great, because I like the wine there, and they're using the same grapes, or, you know, they share a winemaker, whatever the case may be.
Totally. And we're pretty old school when it comes to kind of our grape growing philosophy. Mm-hmm. So David actually worked for about 18 years under Robert Mondavi up in Napa.
Yeah.
He David got his start with trellis design, so like what the grapes grow on, and has done trellising all over the world. He's had 24 patents for different kinds of trellising in three countries. So he's very much kind of a scientist and a farmer at heart. We don't spray anything on our vines, so no herbicide, no insecticide, no pesticide.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We're very little sulfur. Our winery and our tasting room are both 100% solar powered. So
I love that.
No carbon footprint, all recycled and reclaimed water. So I think that shows in the grapes.
Yeah.
And that shows in the wine.
Yeah,
I think
that's
it's
awesome.
Like just a really, really important piece. And I think when you start kind of with a farmer, that just, I want to say organically, that's kind of a funny pun, but that, like, organically just happens, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, like, it's part of the culture. And, like,
yeah.
part of how everything comes together.
Yeah, because it's about, like, taking care of the earth and then the vines, and then that all translates into the glass and the wine that comes out of that ultimately.
Well, and the environment that you're drinking it in.
Yeah, totally.
Like, this is so welcoming. Every person that, like, we've interacted with has been welcoming. Like, I feel like it's...
It all ties together.
It does.
And it's so important. So this land before we bought it was a pistachio farm. Oh. And so there's like nut trees kind of all over. You can kind of see them.
Yeah.
There was a widow who had lived on the property, and she wasn't able to keep up with like all of these trees everywhere. Mm-hmm. So when we got the property, we were hoping to keep a lot of the trees, but there weren't many remaining that were healthy enough to keep. Now that we've revitalized and invested back into the vineyard, it's been so cool to see because all the wildlife has come back to this land. And, like, that's super exciting for us because it's, like, when you see all the different kinds of birds and foxes and, you know, bunnies and all of these things. Totally. Like, it's healthy and it's thriving. Yeah. And that's just, like, the coolest feeling for us because this land just needed, like, a refresh.
Yeah,
you know, for sure. And so it makes it a really cool place to see them all.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you guys are doing it. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So I think the other thing that we're starting to get really known for is our food and food and wine pairing. So we've got an awesome estate chef, Samantha Etel. She was formerly the chef at Mittencraft down in San Luis Obispo. Yeah. They have awesome menu, right? So she's really about... farm to table. So we get all of our produce from Mount Olive, which is the organic produce farm, literally like 4 minutes away, I think, maybe five if you have to wait for someone to pass. But super, super close. We use all local providers, so like J&R Meats, Pasolivo, like everything as close as possible. So we've always have different food programs and food and wine events like
that's awesome.
Coming and changing. So that's really
and you
cool.
You serve food every single day that you're open and you're open
every day.
Every day.
Okay. Cool. So food all day, every day.
That is
food and wine.
Yeah.
It's always a place to come.
I think that's awesome because that's something that's lacking.
Yeah.
Know, like some places have food but only certain hours or you know, like,
or it's a food truck, like, comes and goes.
Yeah, staying open till 6 is genius. And having food, like, come on.
Yeah.
On your way out, back to Paso, like, it's perfect.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're family owned. The tasting room is designed as a home. Like, we want people to be able to come and relax. And, like, you can't enjoy wine if you're hungry. It's like, you can't, you know, it's like having all of these things kind of come together. Yeah. And Chef Samantha does a great job of, like, pairing all the food with the wine, so it's like you're not going to have something kind of funky.
Yeah.
And our brunch program on Sunday is always super, super fun.
So
that's amazing.
I love a brunch.
We always do a sweet option and a savory option. And those menus change about once a month. So always something new kind of coming up.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Yeah. So what kind of wines do you guys focus on? Like, is it Rhone varietals, Bordeaux? It's your flagship?
Primarily Bordeaux.
Okay.
Our flagship is definitely Cab and Cab blends because David spent so much time in Napa. That's just
makes
kind of
sense.
What he knows.
Yeah.
But we also do a Zinfandel because that's what David's grandfather planted.
I was going to say, way back.
Because very it's Paso.
Yeah. Not Bordeaux, but we wanted to still have that, like, pull through of the story, like 90 years. Like, we just wanted to have a piece of that. We also, people are surprised when they visit us. We have a 5-hole putting green downstairs on our downstairs patio. So David's grandfather, once Prohibition started, got into the golf business. And so when they were designing this place, they wanted him to kind of be here.
Yeah.
And so we have a 5-hole putting green. We have complimentary putters and balls. And so while people are like enjoying brunch, they can kind of like play, like the kids can come, like run around. It's we just try to be really family centric.
You already said you're pet friendly.
Yep.
Is that outside only or inside too?
It's outside only because we have the food.
Yeah.
So but we've got 2 upstairs decks, we've got a huge downstairs patio, we have a garden, so there's always
plenty of room
and also plenty of shade too. Yeah. We like never, you know, want someone to feel like they can't bring their dog in and like.
Well, do you have ice cubes?
Yes.
One of my dogs, I have a pug, and she refuses to drink water.
Oh,
she will only eat ice cubes.
So we also serve here, which is really nice at the end of the day. We do a lovely French press coffee from Joe Bella. So
yes.
In Tascadero, great place.
Yeah.
We love them. So we also do French press coffee, we do loose leaf tea, sparkling water. Especially towards the end of the day, sometimes people are like, I'm wined out.
Yeah.
But other people in the group still like want to hang, and so it's a really cool place. Yeah. Like everyone can kind of just come. And
my husband
relax.
Would like that when he's driving me. He can get right? coffee and I can get wine.
Something for everybody, right?
It's amazing.
But it's important.
The view is the view is so beautiful. Like I feel like I keep being drawn that way, and it's like my eye just wants to look at everything.
It's like a painting.
It
they
is.
Actually designed the tasting room so that whichever seat you are sitting in, and you can choose if you want to do your tasting inside or outside, upstairs, downstairs. It's always totally up to you. But in the side of the tasting room, wherever you are seated, they made sure that you would have a vineyard view. And so I haven't found a seat yet that doesn't have one.
That's awesome.
And so they wanted it to feel like this like 360, like immersive vineyard experience, so that some people weren't like, oh, well, you sit out on that side, but I guess I'm just going to look at the wall. You know? We wanted everyone to get to have the vineyard view, and so I think they did a great job.
Yeah. No, for sure. Very cool.
So we're also, we get lots and lots of big groups, which is great. Yeah. Sometimes people come and they're like, what can we do? We didn't make a reservation. We always have room for groups.
Okay.
So
that's
sometimes
really
we might put them downstairs, or we might be like, hey, well, do you like by the glass or by the bottle? But you will always find a way to bring people in and let them have wine.
That's awesome.
Like, so
that's really cool.
We love reservations because it makes sure we can give them like the full experience. But groups are always welcome.
Okay.
So I know sometimes
so
people
like
feel like
six or
like
more 10. For reservations?
Ten or more.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah. So we're pretty flexible. Sometimes people come in and they're like, we're so sorry. We're like, why are you sorry? You're here. We're so glad that you came.
Yeah.
Like, we'll find a way to
but
give you wine.
That's unusual.
You know?
That is unusual.
So we love it.
Man, this is so inviting out here.
I know.
Like, this would be a great last stop, too, because it's like, they're open late. It's beautiful. You're close to town.
You should take a picture. You can't see.
So, ladies, David actually has time to lead you through our tasting.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Okay.
Yeah,
and
thank
you.
With
the winemaker.
Well, let's see. Now, I'm going to go ahead and pour this wine for you. This is our Sauvignon Blanc.
Okay.
And that comes from the little block at the very corner. There's a lot of clay there. And Sauvignon Blanc loves clay.
Yeah.
It actually gives it minerality.
How long have you been making wine?
I've been in the wine business my whole life. My grandfather was had vineyards here. There's a little story in the front about him.
Yeah, we talked about him. We saw the P.O. Box 1. Mm-hmm. I thought that was clever. I wish I had one.
That was his P.O. I remember being a little kid going in, you know, getting the mail for him and stuff like that. So, yeah, I've been doing it quite a while.
Nice.
So I'm going to put this back and I'll be right back.
Thank you. I do get cat pee on this.
Yeah? Oh, the cat pee.
Now, this particular wine, Sauvignon Blanc, let me tell you a little bit about myself first. And I graduated from Davis. And at the time, vineyard trellising was kind of the thing. And this was 1980. And Napa just won the award in 76 for the best wine. You guys are familiar with that?
Yeah.
And Chateau Michelin, one of the best Chardonnay and Stag Do Boer. And it was interesting times because at that time, Napa really wasn't prepared to have it be on the world stage. They had a lot of old vineyards. The rootstocks were wrong. The varieties were wrong. There was a lot of Chenin Blanc in Napa at that time because that was popular at that time. So I went into vineyard trellising and designing vineyards. I designed this one. You can see it's broken up in certain ways that you're supposed to with different varietals and stuff. And I did a plot for my vineyard professor, Dr. Cleaver, there at Davis at some experimental stuff. And a couple years later, some people from Napa came and looked at it, and they were trying to figure out because they wanted to pull out a lot of the vineyards and redo them, modernize them. And they saw what I did, and they liked it, and I had a call from the Mondavis, and they said they'd like for me to go to Napa and work in Napa. So I told them no because I was busy. I was 24 years old.
They probably loved that, though. They were like, no, we really need this guy.
Well, they called my professor, and my professor called me and said, hey, you need to go to Napa. I, wanted to come back here because this is where, you know, my grandfather was. But so I went to Napa, and I was going to be there a year, and I was there 20 years, you know, putting in vineyards for Behringer and Stag's Leap and all these vineyards. Coppola, still putting in vineyards. But anyway, so that's kind of the other side of my business, putting in vineyards. Learned a lot about growing and so forth. And then I took winemaking classes at Davis, and Phil Freeze, the head winemaker at Mondavi, and I became good friends, and so he had me always in the winery, you know, working with him, and it was just really a great relationship there. So I came back here in 1995 and started planting my own vineyards. And so we have three vineyards. We have this one, we have one in Templeton, 100 acres, and then we have one in Creston. So
okay.
We have three different terroirs.
Yeah. So do you mind if I ask a little bit about wine trellising? Like, I don't know much about farming or vineyard design. So I had no idea that there was different ways of doing it. Like, what does that affect? Does it affect the yield or how the fruit turns out?
Both.
Okay.
Exactly, yeah. First of all, what a trellis does is it arranges the vine, because the vine doesn't have a shape. If this was in the wild, it would grab that tree and it would climb up on it, right?
Okay.
That's what a vine does, and it's seeking light.
Mm-hmm.
And light is really the main component, one of the components along with soil that actually adds different characteristics to the wine. You want to expose the leaves to maximum sunlight, but the fruit, depending on the fruit, whether it's a white or a red, and also different whites and different reds require different amounts of light. You can see there, this is something I came up with, there's a white shade cloth there that's rolled up. We actually take that and spread it. It's about 2 foot wide. And we put it right where the fruit is.
Okay.
Because here in Paso, after a certain amount of time, we're starting to get too much sun on the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So light is really important. And actually, light is what gives the skin the different colors and the color of the wine. And then also the different flavors.
Oh.
So the amount of light's critical. And that's controlled by how you arrange the vine, you know, in a shape.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
How interesting.
So is all of your farming, like, done by hand then? If it's so technical, do you have to, like, get in there and, or are you able to use machine for some of it?
Well, the cheaper wines and grapes and wines, they use machines, but we can't. We have to, we literally manicure every single vine.
Wow.
I have 56,000 vines just on this vineyard.
Oh my goodness.
And I have over 250,000 vines, and every single vine is manicured at least 3 times.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, but winemaking starts in the vineyard. Mm-hmm. It's so important. You cannot make really your wine any better than the grapes you receive.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's tough. And what you're really trying to do is capture what's been done in the vineyard. And so that's what's really fortunate for me, because I really started a lot in the vineyard and morphed more into the wine side. So the secrets was right for me. But that's the vineyard side of it. But the question about the trellising is how we display the leaves so it captures the right amount of light, and how the fruit we display it so it captures just enough light for that particular variety to make it the best fruit possible. Because inside, the pulp is nothing more than sugar water.
Right.
It's the skin that actually gives you the characteristics of the grape, of the wine, I should say.
Yeah.
Okay, let me pour your next one. It's going to be the Malbec, which is actually a unique wine for us because we normally use it as a blender.
Uh-huh.
But this was so fantastic, I just had to have it as a standard.
I like a Malbec.
So this is our Malbec. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just trying to take a couple pictures.
No,
I'm distracted by the cute dog.
I'm excited for a Malbec.
Well, this is our Malbec 2016. Gosh, that color's terrible,
man.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that is gorgeous.
Isn't that nice? I just love this Malbec.
Yes.
And normally, again, we use it as a blender. Because of its color and its aromatics is typically more on the earthy side, but this had great aroma. I mean, nice, beautiful fruit to it. And tannins were just steak. Perfect. Isn't that the way that makes you think?
Ooh, that is delicious.
Thank you.
Yeah, that is very
now,
very
Malbec
good.
Is a tough one to have standalone. I got to say that, honestly. It's a tough one. And this just turned out beautiful. I'm really happy with this.
No, that's delicious.
Mm-hmm. I always find that Malbec, for me, like, the reason I always think steak is it always, and I know that this is partly oak too, could be an influence or the secondary fermentation, but I always find it to be a little bit like creamier and butterier. Like I want to have like a nice yummy steak with it.
See, that makes me not want a steak with it.
Really?
It makes me want like a salad, like maybe a steak salad. But I feel like I don't want, if I'm drinking a creamy, rich wine, I don't want a creamy, rich food. But yeah, I feel like I like the contrast more. Like, cause sometimes it's just too much.
Yeah.
I just really love, like, the whole food situation.
Yes, me too.
We're right there with you.
I want to come back and try the roasted tomato baked ricotta, because that just...
What is your favorite food item?
Right now, I'd say it's actually the wild mushroom and olive tapenade. The ricotta is amazing. It's kind of like that perfect cold weather food, because it's like warm, and it's like the cast iron skillet. Yeah. So it's very like cozy.
Anything in a cast iron skillet, I'm a fan of.
It's like, sign me up. I'll take it. It's Rocky 2015 vintage. We'll do a little splash so we can.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Cheers.
Thank you.
Does that say chop? Which makes sense because.
Sorry, I thought that was. I didn't realize that said notes. I thought it was pairing because I saw milk chocolate and then I was like, you pair it with chalk.
That's awesome.
That'd be great. Love to pair it with
chalk. I would really like to pair that with chalk.
I liked it. I did want some food with it.
Yes. Like, I feel like it deserves food.
It's, yeah. It's got some, well, it's kind of neat because it's one of those, like, very versatile reds when you can pair with, like, a very different variety of that. Someone once described it as, like, cherry pie. I was like, oh, it's kind of cool.
I honestly don't know that if I've ever had cherry pie.
Chocolatey to me.
If I'm being honest.
I should have made a pie. I hate making pie. Pie is such work.
I only like to eat pumpkin pie.
I love pumpkin pie.
Love pumpkin pie.
It didn't go with lasagna, though.
I would eat pumpkin. Honestly, my favorite time to eat pumpkin pie is for breakfast. That's my favorite part of Thanksgiving, is the next day getting to eat pumpkin pie for breakfast.
I like that. I like your style. This look in right here is 50% cab,
35% raw. Ooh, that, I love that. That is delicious.
It's kind of neat because with that blend, it's going to be a little bit bigger, a little bit more like that intense fruit, but it's actually pretty silky.
Yeah.
No, that is, that's really good.
You're actually on the very low end of everything's body.
I feel like the retail price as well is
$50.
Very surprising for me.
It's reasonable.
Yeah. Thank you. Sorry to rush you. We didn't mean to rush you.
You're good.
Oh, that's like so different from the other one.
But that is delicious.
So I've decided I'm not really a cab person. I really prefer the blend over the straight cab.
I like both, but I think this is delicious. I would like this with a steak.
I'm not a cab person. I've just decided. Realized. Come to realization.
Like, just now you realize that, or in general?
I think in general. Like, I think I've been getting there, and then, like, now I'm, like, so, like, because we've had a lot of cab today, and we don't typically have a lot of cab, like, in one day, and I think I've just realized, like, it's not about... Oh, this vineyard or this winery, their cabin, not into. It's just I'm not a cab person.
I am, and I really like that one. Thank you for listening to this episode of Central Coast Uncorked. We hope that you enjoyed hearing the tasting experience from our point of view.
If you did enjoy the episode, please rate, review, subscribe on your podcast platform, and maybe even share it with a friend. Connect with us on social media because we will be posting places that we're headed and that we're recording at. So you'll get some inside tips that we don't release in the podcast. And you can also let us know where you think we should go.
We'll see you guys next week for another new episode.
Bye.
Bye.